Welcome to Feedback Fatigue. I'm Jake Hughes.
And I'm Katie Ritter.
Welcome to the season finale, Katie.
The last episode. Wow. What a journey.
It is the last official episode.
And a big thank you to everyone that's joined.
No doubt. We do have a surprise for December, so keep an eye out for a bonus episode. But in official terms, this is the last episode of the season.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to what season two might bring. We've had a great season one, a great lineup of guests, and I think we're going to take a little bit of a break here and come back with, I think, season two of Feedback Fatigue, back and better than ever. What do you think?
Yes, so today we have episode 8, Michael DeMilla, the managing partner at Charlesgate, as the end to season one. We are going to come back for season two. We're taking a break throughout the early part of the winter. And I think in my mind, we're targeting Social Media Summit in March for the relaunch of season two. So we'll be having more conversations in January and February, which will be fun as always. And then kick off season two in March. It's been great. And I think if anyone else is doing a podcast that's listening to this, it's okay to take breaks. And we've designed that system from the beginning and feel great about it. Honestly.
The front load of recording and then the slow release has been, it's okay. Take breaks.
Yeah.
We can get a lot. Get to be a lot.
As always with any content thing, we are barely hanging on by the end and we're barely getting this stuff out the door, but we've hit all our deadlines. So that's wonderful.
That's a win. And in Jake fashion, we're wrapping up in the black t-shirt.
Of course.
On brand.
Today's episode.
I'm excited for this episode today.
Yes.
Yeah.
I reached out to Michael this summer and he has a point of view. He has a way of thinking about how to run a portfolio. And I think that's super interesting. And he gets into a number of those details today, his multifamily operating model, and which focuses on functional specialization, as he calls it, Katie.
Yeah. And I think it's a perfect ending episode because it really talks about a future state, a future model, and he talks about where we've come from in terms of operating an asset, operating a group of assets, and then where he thinks we're headed and how it's worked for Charlesgate. So it's a lot of great info in here. One thing that I enjoyed our small discussion around micro versus macro feedback, micro feedback being the day-to-day one-off, what happened with this resident after a work order, let's deal with it, versus the macro systemic feedback that comes up consistently and how to solve for systems and challenges and implement new changes to run the whole operation better. So you're eliminating some of that micro feedback. So I liked that terminology that he used and how they think about it.
With that, we'll keep this intro short for once and get right into it.
Spare everyone. Mm-hmm.
So this, as always, find Feedback Fatigue on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wideworld.com/feedback-fatigue. Let's get into season one, episode 8, with Michael DeMilla.
Are you going to OpTech?
Me?
I'm asking. We're Jake's not going either. I said no.
I'm not either.
I can't spend another minute with you.
I got kicked off the team.
no, we're doing like a happy hour thing.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
If you're Rihanna, it's going to toss you in.
maybe invite. Well, thank you. Thank you for the maybe invite. Appreciate that.
It's like
are you going to ride the bull, Katie?
I don't know.
Or is
Western, Southern, there's a mechanical bull involved.
A Western
theme? I'm going to avoid that if I can, but...
Perfect. No way. You have to ride the bull and then splice it into the edit of the podcast.
All right, work on that.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to do a fundraiser element of it. So it's if you ride the bull, $500 or something, or if they hit a certain level,
how much is going to
take?
Have
to ride.
I would probably do it if someone,
what's your number, Katie?
I don't know. I don't think people are that excited to see me ride a bull. So if we got up to $50, I would do it. We'll see. But we'll see. Wow. Yeah.
Nice.
I'll let you know. Maybe you'll see footage. We'll see. Thanks for joining us, Michael. It's great to have you on. We like to start these conversations with the same question of just, and it's intentionally open-ended, but what is your relationship with feedback as we dive into the conversation?
Yeah, let me start pretty broadly. And I'm one of those, I say this a lot to my team, so I'll say it to you guys too. I feel like feedback is a gift. And really, whether you're talking about supervisor to employee, colleague to colleague, or resident or client to a manager, I think feedback's a gift in so many ways that you can take and learn to get better with, grow with, improve by, celebrate in some cases. But it is really very much a gift that is, I think, important to ask for and important to give when you can as well.
I love that. It always feels so special when you get something in and you get to see what people really think of you and make sense of that.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I'm curious. You have a very clear stance on your view of the world in terms of what the right operating model is, which loops back to feedback that we'll get to there. But just to preface for our listeners, what's your view on the modern day operating model?
Yeah, we definitely have a strong opinion on how multifamily should be operating these days, how we think it operates most effectively. And it really relates to what we call functional specialization, which is essentially a way of taking apart a property manager role and splitting it into the various functions that are required to be done most effectively. And then hiring the right people to serve those functions in a team pod environment so that you are spreading the load across a team, centralizing aspects of it that make the most sense to be centralized and making more efficient that way, but decentralizing, actually bringing some of the roles closer to the resident that are the ones that are meant to drive like that hospitality experience, the better resident experience, and all of those things that deliver better resident, better experience outcomes that should get closer and be able to get feedback and give help and hospitality experiences more regularly. So that's really our core kind of concept. There is not a lot of the industry is going to this idea of centralization. And maybe that means moving one role offsite into, you know, the home office, or a couple of roles offsite, or all the roles offsite, and implement technology. And all those things can be done, but we don't think it's just one or the other, right? There's got to be a combination. And so if we have the roles that are meant to deliver a better resident experience closer to those residents, that leads to a better outcome. And the ones that aren't necessarily needing to be as close, whether it's finance, whether it's strategic business planning, whether it's all these other aspects that can be better served as centralized, that's the better way to do it. So that's our kind of very 50,000 foot view of
And I got to imagine that models. Took some iterations. How did you arrive? You've been in this industry for a long time. So I'm curious, like, how you came to this. And maybe you don't have to share every iteration, but was there feedback you were getting along the way that made your direction? And are there maybe a couple different moments that stick out to you as, oh, yeah, no, we're not doing that, or this worked really well?
Yeah, there's a few different things that came up, but definitely we didn't just make the leap from normal traditional operating to this new model that we have created. But I will say there's a couple of things that really drove it. One is we're coming from the sort of middle market. So we have naturally had to have portfolio style management, and that's where we learned a lot of these tools and operational systems and been able to put them in place, because frankly, it was the only way to operate. So there are constraints, and constraints, I think, are also a gift in the sense that they force you, there's a forcing function to innovate, and you're not just have this sort of static, oh, things are working okay, so we don't have to do anything. So for us, it was like, we have to make some changes, because we couldn't have a single manager on an island trying to do all these functions, especially across a portfolio. If they're managing three or four buildings, in that case, across a 30, 40, 50 unit type
properties. So that forcing function is what we were able to say is, okay, how should this work? What does this look like? And what is it that's important out of the outcomes we're trying to achieve in any given property or portfolio? Okay, so what we're trying to achieve here, if you take a step back, like a great resident experience is a key part of that. But also the other part of it is the financial metrics that owners want to see, and ROI, net operating income increasing, capitalized value increasing over time, risk mitigation, right? And so we're like, okay, so how would we, if everything was just starting from fresh, how would we structure it so that we can achieve both of those outcomes, which are sometimes in conflict, right? There's sometimes you have to make choices and trade-offs and offsets that you have to make those decisions that can maybe perhaps weigh the scale one end or the other. So that just gave us the opportunity to really look at what would a new model look like. And then we slowly began implementing. This is, I think it was 2017 or 18 when we started really discussing it. And then we started implementing it right around 2019 and into 2020. Then we had COVID, and that opened up a whole nother can of worms that caused a little bit more forcing function for us to drive it even faster into implementation. So there's definitely a number of iterations. And by the way, I don't think we're there yet. I think we still have some room to grow and to improve on the model and how we're implementing it. But then there were those few things that came into play. The other big thing for us that was a part of this, and I think it's an under recognized thing, is the amount of turnover in the industry is huge, like in terms of the employee turnover managers. I've seen some stats as high as 35 to 37%, I think was the last stat I saw recently, about how much annual turnover there are for property management roles, which is insane and way higher than almost any other industry. And a big part of that is like, just, it's so hard to be working on an island almost by yourself on a really small team. You have to do everything. You have to be a jack of all trades. You have to be, in one hand, trying to deliver an amazing experience, on the other hand, balancing a budget and collecting rent and fixing maintenance, triaging maintenance issues. And so it's really hard to do all those things. And it's a stressful job. It's a super stressful job. So that was the other thing for us that we recognize, is can we solve that problem also? And just deliver a better employee experience across all the roles, and create more of career pathways within functions and then into leadership roles. And so all of these things just added up to us designing the model that we're operating under now. And it has worked pretty well. Like I said, we're by no means perfect. There's still some things that we have are working on tweaking all the time. But in the holistic viewpoint of it, we see it working dramatically better than a traditional model of a manager on an island or a small management team on an island on a property by themselves and really having to do everything on their own.
I'm curious to double click on the stress relief. Can you provide some specific ways in which your model relieves stress?
Yeah, I think there's much more of a team-oriented approach. So for one, mm-hmm. we have a lot higher level of collaboration across properties, across portfolios, across the company, actually, than I think most traditional managers have, where they have managers, again, on an island working on a small team. And that's the bulk of their interaction is with only that themselves or that small team in the majority of cases. We have a much more collaborative team-based approach, not just within the individual small team pods that we have that service that contain the various functions, but also across those pods, we have a much more collaborative approach because you can then be sharing within the function of that you're serving. So in having that collaborative approach to say, okay, how are we doing leasing? How are we doing maintenance across this function? How are we doing rent collections and maintenance triage and business planning? So it gives us a lot more opportunity for more collaboration and more sort of sharing and creating best practices holistically, which I think in and of itself reduces the stress. The other thing is that a manager is not required to be a jack of all trades, pulling the hair out, trying to like just scramble from fire to fire. They can be a little bit more strategic within their function, have a little bit more of a purpose with sort of key results that they are responsible for, rather than having to be responsible for everything all the time. So I think both of those things in combination really help reduce the stress. Now, not wholly. This is a difficult job. It's a complaint-driven industry, essentially. You're always trying to solve problems for people, whether it's maintenance or collections or whatever else. There are oftentimes problems to solve. So it's stressful by its nature. But in our opinion, there's no reason that the management company should make it worse with a stress, kind of old school structure.
And that totally makes sense. Clear is kind, totally. For sure. I'm curious how this translates to business development. So when you're with new clients, does this operating model resonate with them? Have you, when you were explaining, I got to imagine you had to explain the model maybe before you implemented it to winning new business and being like, this is what we're going to do. Was there any feedback you got from pitches, from the business development perspective on your model and what you were planning to do?
Yeah, other than you guys are complete idiots. No,
yeah,
I think
was there a lot of pushback?
I shouldn't say there's been a ton of pushback, in all honesty. I think when we, yeah. I think it requires explanation and a little bit of like teaching, but once we are able to explain it, a lot of the reactionaries we get is, oh, that makes a lot of sense, actually. So we've got we've received a lot of good feedback. I think there were certain points that I would say as we were coming into the model that were a little bit confusing and a little bit chaos driving, frankly, if I'm being honest. And so that transition period is oftentimes the most difficult. But now that we're talking to clients and explaining this, how this works, now that we've got it dialed in a more powerful way, I think it really resonates and has resonated really powerfully with a lot of clients, prospective clients, and just frankly in the market in general, because it's one of those things that almost no other business operates the way multifamily does, yeah. Where you don't have like jack of all trades in every position, right? You don't have entry-level positions leading your revenue function with leasing agents in the first job out of their 2 months into their career. You just don't have these things. They don't make sense in every other industry. So why do we do it in multifamily? And when we talk to people and talk to clients like that and explain the way we have things set up, it's, oh, that's actually obvious now that you explain it. Now, the challenge is implementing that and operationalizing it. That can be, you know, a challenge and why it's difficult to do. But I think it if explained well, it just makes sense to most people that we talk to.
Okay. I have another question. I'll let you go. And then I'll let you go, Jake. Curious about this resident services manager function and how they interact with resident feedback. And we talked in our prep call about this micro versus macro feedback. So I'm curious if you're able to talk a little bit about that and how that resident services manager role interacts with feedback daily.
Yeah, totally. That's a good question. And so the resident services role is that role that we've created to carve out the sort of the interactions with residents, the direct sort of relationship with residents is driven by that resident service manager role. Their job is principally focused on making sure there's a great experience for the residents. And so feedback is from the residents is a key part of their role and one of the key things that goes on their scorecard. And so I think we talked about micro feedback in terms of when we're doing things for residents, like whether it's a maintenance request or other sort of ticket they might submit or other things, there's a ability for them to give immediate feedback after that and rank 1 through 5 stars. How was the experience? How was the repair? Is it done? That type of stuff as far as in the moment feedback. And that's generally our primary feedback source. And so we're monitoring that on a weekly basis with the team within those team pods and then across pods in a regional basis and making sure we're looking at our rating from a score, but also the qualitative data as well, which has the feedback and the team can react with. So what we do is make sure the team is A, monitoring it, but B, responding to it as well, saying, hey, whether it's thanks for the great feedback that it went well, or we maybe we'll have some things to fix and do better next time. If there's a major concern or a consistent concern that comes up, we'll try to then build a better sort of SOP for that process in the future. And that's where we can really collaborate and share best practices across the team and not just have something that's really effective implemented in one property, but spread that across the portfolio pretty quickly and pretty effectively. And so that's how we use that. We also have macro feedback, not as regularly. I think it was what we talked about in the call as far as saying just on a regular basis, like what's your general perception of the property? We have and we do occasional ad hoc surveys across the resident pool. But generally, we have been mostly focused on that micro feedback, the micro experiences when we're actually delivering services to a resident. That said, I think it makes sense to try to do more of the macro feedback too, that we'll probably have a little bit of a build for some SLP on that end as well, or perhaps
a
service.
It's hard to measure some of that sometimes. Go ahead, Jake.
Do you have... is there anybody centralized to manage the feedback at a portfolio level and bring it in from all of the resident services managers?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, we monitored across the whole of the portfolio, exactly. So there's regional kind of management and leadership that reviews the feedback across all of the properties in the portfolio. And so that's what we'll see, if there's any of these real commonalities popping up and that we may need to implement a bigger wholesale process change or some sort of training that might need to be implemented to overcome some negative feedback that has come up a few times across various properties. So we do that and make sure that it is monitored at both the property portfolio level, but also across the whole company. So yeah, that's a key part of it too. Our scorecards stack up and our feedback stacks up into one another. So we've been a pyramid kind of function so that we can really be monitoring it at each level as appropriate.
I don't know if you're going to want to divulge all the details, but has there been any specific examples of a problem that has arisen from feedback that you weren't aware of originally?
I don't have a necessary problem divulging. I don't know if I can think of. I'm not probably the right person to ask to answer the question. I will say what is most common for feedback that mm-hmm. we get, for negative feedback, is the communication hasn't been fast enough, good enough, or enough. It's just, that's really the major commonality. Now, there might be a root cause in various different circumstances, but generally speaking, it's, hey, you haven't been responsive enough to my issue. That's the sort of primary common negative feedback that we get. And so there might be various root causes there that I don't have an example of on the top of my head. But frankly, although I will say it is one of the things that we have, part of the reason why we even have been implementing this model in the first place is because I think we were hearing that more and more often in the past. We're like, okay, this really isn't making sense because we're asking the property manager to do too many, or the property manager to do too many things, and they get lost. Something gets lost through the crack. Slips through the cracks, and oftentimes that is just being able to respond to someone in a timely manner. And so we've dramatically reduced that now in our structure, but still that's oftentimes the common yep. complaint, negative complaint.
It's not unique.
It's not unique to you at all. It's very common.
Yeah.
We look at a lot of data, and communication is the number three driver of negativity, and it tends to get into everything.
Interesting.
In preparation for this interview, I pulled about 1,500 example reviews from the first quarter of this year and put them into a GPT tool that we built to see what it pulled out in terms of summarizing the information.
Literally, number one.
Unresponsiveness. So there you go, right there.
Yeah. Who needs AI anymore? Where is there?
Number
we got
one. Yep. It's, common sense prevails. One nuance that I liked, so there are two nuances that I think are useful for this conversation. One, the proper communication channels. So having good communication about what the right communication channel is, either in person, email, text, phone, whatever, who to contact, what the number is. In our last podcast, we talked about not having call tracking numbers confusing with the primary number. All those things can lead to confusion. So that's one. And then two is delayed responses in critical situations. Mm. So the nuance of your playbook for what's the accepted level of speed in a normal situation is not the same if somebody has broken into someone's apartment and they need help.
Interesting.
Right away. So those are two that stand.
And those two you're bucketing into that first unresponsiveness, or those two separate or three separate things?
These are subtopics within
communication. Yeah. Okay, cool. Interesting. Yeah. Oh, fascinating. I love hearing that. I'd love to, if you can share your data, I would love to see that. I don't know if you guys are putting out a report definitely. Or something. That's really fascinating.
Give you some of those insights. It's pretty.
We'll give you some. And it's we'll give you some stuff.
It's been interesting to look at these really broad topics of communication management comes up in negative reviews, and then understanding like what about those different umbrella topics are the biggest complaints. And it does become, these themes become common, and it's mm-hmm. not isolated to one specific group. The one thing that maintenance is always a really big topic, and just the lack of response to maintenance requests, and is that simple as updating them early and often on the progress, I think. And I actually think helping with the specialization that you have in your roles. Like, they know it's very clear who to reach out to. It's very clear who's handling these requests. So I think that's helpful in eliminating that uncertainty. But maintenance is another topic that comes up often with the in the management umbrella. And yeah. No, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
One of the other things, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm actually curious, because this is another sort of more intuition thing on my standpoint. I don't know if you have data on it, but I feel like there's more sort of technology implemented and you're separating people from people and you're reducing the human element there. It almost feels like that causes a lot of friction and a more negative experience feel for residents versus more trying to humanize it more. And we want to bring obviously efficiency. We use technology, but we want to try to avoid eliminating the human element. Because I feel like as you do that, it just gets really, there's a strange experience that starts getting generated for most mm-hmm. people. And we hear about things like the loneliness epidemic and there's not lack of human connection. And I feel like that's creating a lot of negative sentiment out there in properties and frankly, the experience 1,000% of living in a building.
People are the number one driver of a positive experience. And it's not even close in terms of the next topic. It's like it's in 65-66% mm. of positive reviews. And so I think when you figure out where those high stress situations are, a move-in, a work order, like that's where people need that human reassurance to be like, someone is on this in those moments of stress.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that for us, that's why I've talked a lot with other folks and you talk about how we're doing virtual tours and self-guided tours and all these things. We may have actually touched on this in an earlier conversation, but it actually leads to what we've seen is worse outcomes, actually worse financial results for the property. The leasing is slower. It's your vacancy's higher. And also, but it's a worse experience for the residents as well, because I think there's this loss about how difficult it is to move and how difficult the choice it is to find a new home that you're going to live in. And when you don't have that human element there, even someone that's a good leasing consultant, a professional leasing person can help people make the best decision, be confident in the decision they're making. And when they don't have that, there's a really big gap, I think, and the experience is more negative. And frankly, the results, the financial results of the property are also negative. So it's just a lose with way too much implementation of technology, whether it's self-guided tours or otherwise.
Yeah, there's a real limit there. We've always viewed ourselves as a hybrid business. We are technology sophisticated and forward, but we're not 100% technology all the time, every day, solve every problem. You're still dealing with real people. You're still dealing with your residents. Building your reputation, you need to be involved in. Like your centralization strategy, it isn't an all or nothing situation. There's nuance here. You need people involved. For reputation, people are the most influential. Technology needs to make them better at their job. It seems like the other component of that is organizational structure, is the other piece that's going to enable on-site teams to do their best work.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think that's right. If you're with the right organizational structure, you can be human hospitality forward, but also building in the right technology and tools to make the jobs more efficient, make things a little bit more seamless, enable your team as a tool to better deliver those human experiences. And that's what we're driving to as well. And that, call it hybrid, call it whatever you like. But I am very much overly cautious about going too far into this automated technology first direction, even though it might feel like cost savings for a lot of operators at first. I feel like it's going to be a bigger expense in the long run with in terms of loss of experience and the loss of actually outcomes of financially or long-term capitalized value
people
of properties.
When they know that there's a human on the other end of an interaction or it's a robot. I think that there's, how many times have you called like a Verizon and just I'm yelling like, representative, get me to a person. And so technology that enables you to access people in a way that's productive for them too, like avoiding that property manager who's doing everything and all these channels are flying at them. I do think that's another way. That's role specialization really helps. Like, they call me, I don't have the answer, but I know exactly who does, and I can send you exactly to that person who does, and having that confidence internally to solve the problem for sure.
Yeah. Totally.
I'm like,
can't wait to hear your Verizon call this recording is, on the next podcast.
This is certainly being used for training. Just represented it.
That might have to be the intro to this episode, Katie.
Oh, shout out Verizon.
That's awesome.
Poor Verizon. I'm curious to learn more about your scorecard. How do you guys put those together? What are people looking at when you're assessing the team?
Yeah, there's a set of metrics across each pod. I think you could probably think about the most of the important property manager KPIs you may think of. We're just making sure they're very upfront and visible on a weekly basis and not just looking at a monthly report, whether it's rent collections, occupancy, or percent of budget spent. That would be on the kind of the budget financial portfolio manager roles scorecard. On the resident experience or resident services manager scorecard, you'll have things like those review metrics. You'll have things like inbound requests for service and other things like that that are more related to that hospitality approach and what we're trying to do on that end. On leasing, obviously, we'll have some leasing metrics, appointments, tours, results, leases signed, those types of things. On maintenance, we'll have open work orders, closed work orders. So we're not inventing new KPIs for the business. What we're doing is just putting an owner to those numbers and not have one person own them all. We're giving specific owners in a functional way so that if I'm in a resident mm-hmm. services role, I know I own these three numbers. And so I need to drive those. If I'm in another role, I own these two numbers and I've got to drive those in a positive way because that's my role. And so that's the difference. We're not inventing some new way to measure something or score something or create a scorecard. It's just really creating that functional ownership that is the organizational structure that drives the results overall for the residents and the property financial results.
But you have a template per function that, like, on day one, you get handed a set of metrics that you now need to
run. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we have basically a weekly, what we'll call it, an on-track meeting weekly on Mondays. And we go through the numbers. And each pod goes through their numbers. That then feeds up to the leadership scorecard as well. And so we're basically, again, building that triangle across the organization. So we're getting the frontline reports and frontline numbers all the way up to the leadership of the organization. And every number has an owner. And so that's right. And if your job is leasing, you have a scorecard. If your job is resident services, you have a scorecard and you know what needs to get measured and how it's being measured and where it's coming from and hopefully if things are off track, that's when we ask you, what's your plan to improve your number or hit the target that we're setting. And that's the way this all should tie together and work out. Just creating, empowering the team to be accountable to doing a more specific thing very well.
Yeah. It sounds very efficient. It sounds, I think creating that consistency and clarity is really like 90% of the battle. And it's really clear where you stand, and then the KPIs you have influences the behavior of your team, what they're striving for and working for, and it creates that that buy-in, which is awesome. So
totally. It's not magic though, and it's not perfect, so I don't want to be misleading mm-hmm. be like, oh, this is Pollyanna. This is hard work, and we're asking the team to do hard things, and oftentimes mistakes are made, but this is a mechanism to correct things faster, to be empowered to do things and do it in a little bit more consistent way across the organization than you typically would get, again, on managers on an island approach doing their own thing from property to property, or just trying to do too many things all at once and not really knowing what their priorities are in any given moment, which creates stress and creates worse outcomes for residents and for owners. So that's the approach we're taking. And I think we're on the right track. We're not there yet. We're still trying to improve and tweak and refine the system. And I'm excited about it. So that's cool. I think the team's excited about it and jazzed up, and it really gives them an opportunity to do important work and really driving that, you know, I tell the team this all the time too, where this job is so important because you're caring for people's, like, literally most important thing in a lot of ways, their home, right? Or on the flip side, their most important or one of their largest financial assets or investment opportunities. And so, yeah, so that's a really cool responsibility that we have.
Jake, did you? I was like, were you trying to move?
I was like,
you were doing a good job trying
so you see,
to
is there a light over
like waving at my sensor over there. Yeah, I was trying to
You did a good job trying to play it off.
All right, and this is over. That's all. That's all.
It's my cue to go, guys. See you later. Bye bye. There we go. There we go. Yeah, I'm back in business. Yeah. I told you not everything works to plan. Awesome.
We'll end it there then. Thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate talking with you and learning more about what Charles Gate has
been. Yeah, man, this is really fun. A lot of good conversation. And sorry for my technical difficulties with the lighting, but
thank you so much.
It's always something, and we work through it here. But that was a great conversation, guys. Really appreciate you inviting me on, and congrats on launching this new podcast and getting it rolling. You got a great initial guest list, and I'm
thank
excited
so
to
much.
Be a part of the crew here.